Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
Week after Urban Meyer fired assistant coach Zach Smith, new details have emerged about what those close to the Ohio State head coach, including his wife Shelley, allegedly knew about a 2015 domestic violence incident between Smith and his estranged ex-wife Courtney. In a report from college football reporter Brett McMurphy posted on Facebook, Courtney Smith said, quote, all the wives knew, every single one. She said that Shelley Meyer told her she would tell the Buckeyes coach, though Smith said she never confirmed that the coach was informed of the abuse. Here's coach at Big Ten Media Days.
2015, I got a text late last night that something happened in 2015, and there was nothing. Unless, once again, there's nothing. You know, once again, I don't know who creates a story like that.
Podcaster verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Civil asset forfeiture is a key tool that helps law enforcement defund organized crime, takes back ill-gotten gains from them, and prevent new crimes from being committed.
Man, battle station special.
Chief of Watch, sign the general alarm.
From the Buy With Rob studio, located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
What is courteous
fire? Initiating fire.
Hey, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause, thought about the laws of gravity, tugboats, asset forfeiture, college sports, politics, history, and the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, the United States Coast Guard announced yesterday that they are starting the investigation of the duck boat sinking. Surprise! They also announced that they already knew what caused it. In New Mexico, a federal judge says that just because you're the government, that doesn't mean you can just steal things from citizens. There are bigger implications, of course. And the college football world was rocked yesterday, but should it have been? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. Leave me a voicemail there, too, if you'd like. Email remains dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Of course, we're on the web. Look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and, oddly enough, thedavebowmanshow.com. Weird how that works, huh? Eloqui conitio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. It's cold here today. I mean, it's cold. I don't know how else to describe it. It's cold. Last week, I'm bitching about the heat. This week, it's cold. Oh, well. So, it was 28 years ago. Do you believe that? 28 years ago today. It would have been much earlier. I mean, it was Eastern time zone. I was stationed in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and I was on my way to Williamsburg, Virginia. Because, well, I was actually going on the first date I was having with what is now my ex-wife, and we were going to Colonial Williamsburg. We're going to have lunch and then go over to the park. The Busch Gardens has a great park there. But Colonial Williamsburg is wonderful. I always hate to sound like a travel agency, but I guess in a way, you know, I've been blessed in my life to be able to travel quite a bit. Particularly when I was younger. I don't really much enjoy it anymore. However, let me completely change tangents again, and then I'll come back to this. Some circumstances changed that I don't really want to get into here, but we had to cancel our California vacation. We were supposed to go to California in 3 weeks, but Some things happened and we had to cancel that. And no, it didn't have anything to do with the fires or anything going on in the straw ban or anything else in California. I was really looking forward to it. But at the same time, I wasn't looking forward to it because it wasn't really a vacation as much as it was a, you know, check the box visitation and things like that. But at any rate, we've had to rework our vacation. And so I was telling you the other day about Ben asking me my favorite place on the planet. My favorite place in the world is Little Piney Creek, Wyoming, which, as it turns out, is not the Little Piney Creek, Wyoming that's a city. It's actually just a Little Piney Creek. It's not a city. It's actually near Story, Wyoming. We're gonna go that direction instead. We're going to spend a couple days in Yellowstone, and we're going to spend a couple days in a place called Thermopolis, Wyoming, and then we're going to spend a day and a half in my favorite place in the world, northern Wyoming, southern Montana. So I'm looking forward to that. So towards the end of August, we'll get you more details, but I'm obviously going to be gone for a better part of a week, more than a week. So we'll let you know. Anyway, back to August 2nd. I used to like to travel a lot, and I used to love to get off the interstates and go places. But Williamsburg was always one of my favorite places to go. It's a beautiful, beautiful little area, and if you ever get to go, you should go. Busch Gardens used to be one of my favorite amusement parks, mostly because it was so well designed, unlike other amusement parks that I could name. Disney World, you didn't actually stand in line for years. Sometimes, very rarely, but not most of the time. And it wasn't because it wasn't busy or crowded. It was because they designed it properly. Anyway, I was on my way there August 2nd, 1990, when the radio announced that Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait. And I remember I was talking to some people. We were standing around chit-chatting. And as it turned out, at the time, I was the only one who knew where Kuwait even was. So that was kind of weird. But it's odd to me to think about certain dates in history and how they revolve around that. I mean, August 2nd is the date that John Kennedy saved the crew of PT-109. And then this invasion of Kuwait that would change my own life in such a significant way. And yet at the same time was the first date with what would become my ex-wife, which also changed my life and in a pretty significant way. So I don't know. It's just one of those days where it was a weird day. I remember that. I remember thinking that day as I was driving to Williamsburg, I remember thinking, this is not going to end well. Because Saddam Hussein is an insane lunatic. And as it turns out, he was. So I sleep better knowing he's gone. Hopefully you do as well. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the duck boat thing, but I got to tell you this whole duck boat story, because I up here in the Pacific Northwest, you get a lot of this kind of thing. We have a duck boat company over in Seattle. There was one in San Francisco. The duck boats are, I'm not sure what the term I'm looking for is. They're popular. People like them. But they're boats. They go on water, and water is dangerous. And I just don't know what the hell happened to common sense in people. I just don't. I watched yesterday the press conference. I don't know why I did, but I did. $100 million lawsuit, a second lawsuit. They want duck boats banned worldwide. Well, nationwide anyway. And I keep coming back to, okay, don't get me wrong, the operators of this particular duck boat, boy, I don't even know where to start with them, but at some point, doesn't self-preservation have to step into this? If you're looking out and you see bad weather coming, don't you kind of go, well, maybe it's not the smartest thing in the world to get into a boat and go out on the water? Where's the line between, okay, these people were clearly negligent, and don't get me wrong, they were. The operators of this particular duck boat were either idiots or just, I don't even, they were either idiots or they were just trying to kill people, one of the two. But in any particular case, where does the line to say, you know, I shouldn't get into that boat? Is it the same place where the line is where I shouldn't get into a car with a drunk guy? Should I not get into a car with a teenager who's behaving irrationally and ends up getting a police officer killed. I mean, where's the line for this? And I don't know. The Coast Guard yesterday announced that they have, quote unquote, begun their investigation into the sinking of the duck boat in Missouri. But at the same time, they also announced they already know what pretty much caused it. And I don't mean water getting into the people tank. Obviously, that's what, you know, the boat was not designed to handle that kind of weather, and it was operated incorrectly. And so the Coast Guard announced yesterday that this particular company, while the boat itself had passed its safety inspection, there were rules about when it could and could not go in the water. And one of the rules was you don't go in the water when the wind's over such and such miles an hour, which, of course, it was, which means that the operators of the boat are going to be liable for this because they ignored their own safety rules and went ahead and did it anyway. And I get that. I understand from a legal standpoint, they're going to be liable and they're, you know, there's not enough money. They don't have enough money in the world to pay this off. They're not going to. But now the lawsuit is to ban them everywhere. San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Boston, Philadelphia, everywhere that there's a duck boat, we're going to ban these things is what they want because some idiots didn't follow the rules. Right? Does that make sense to anybody? Does anybody raise their hand and go, sure. One person was a moron, and so we should take it away from everybody. Now, personally, I wouldn't get into a duck boat. I just don't have any desire to get into one. I don't, you know, it's odd because I'm a sailor, but I don't like to get in the water with people that I don't know what their background is. I don't know what their training is. If I'm going to get on a boat, ship, anything of that sort, I want to know that the person who's running that thing is actually qualified to do it. And with these tour boats, I just don't have that comfort. I just don't. I know when I get on a ferry boat to go to Seattle and back, I see the captain up there and I know what they've gone through. And I can walk over there and see their certifications. I know what they go through before they just let them drive a ferry into the dock at Seattle. And I also know that even these guys that are professionals that are doing it for years and doing it, you know, 20 times a day still manage to run into the piers on a fairly regular basis. I would not get into a boat with somebody that's their certifications are not, you know, clear to me. And unfortunately, people do it every day and they violated their own safety rules and off they go. All that to say that water will kill you, folks. It's always trying to kill you. It doesn't matter if it's the ocean, a pond, a lake, a river, a swimming pool, the gutter in front of your house during a heavy storm. Water is trying to kill you. It always has, it always will, and it will keep trying to kill you. And if you let it kill you, it will. Don't get into a boat if you don't know what's going on. Anyway, banning duck boats. That's the latest lawsuit. We should ban duck boats. It's like something, the accident rate for these things is extremely low. The injury accident rate for this is kind of surprising to me low, but it's very low. And again, at some point, don't you have to take some responsibility for the fact that you were dumb enough to get into this boat? Don't you have to say, well, look, okay, they weren't following the rules, but I was dumb enough to get in there with them. Isn't there some element of that? Shouldn't there be some element of that? That's my problem with the whole thing. In New Mexico yesterday, the federal court ruled that the civil asset forfeiture program being conducted by the city down there, Albuquerque, was unconstitutional. We have been talking about asset forfeiture for many, many years. This is a program that the Trump administration, I mean, you heard Jeff Sessions there, believes is a great program. Back when we did, on February 8th, we did a Constitution Thursday about a specific asset forfeiture case. And at that time, I played a tape for you with a bunch of sheriffs and President Trump as they were sitting around talking about the fact that who could possibly be against asset forfeiture? This is a great idea. This is how we take money away from drug dealers. Sure, it could be that, but unfortunately what it's become is a government revenue program, specifically for local revenue, local governments. It's become an abused program, and regardless of what good it might do, the fact is it continues to do a lot of not so good. And somehow or another, governments continue to excuse it, and they continue to abuse it, and they continue to do these things, and they shrug it off with this, well, it's not our problem, we're just following the law mentality. And then Congress throws up their hands and goes, well, you know, it's the Commerce Department or the Justice Department or whoever department, it's not our fault. And then the executive throws up its head, how could be against this? This is a great idea. This prevents drug dealers from contemplating more crimes. No, it doesn't. If civil asset forfeiture stopped crimes from happening in the future, why do we still have crimes? Duh. It doesn't prevent anything. All it does is get the government money. Some years ago, we had an incident in Southern California. Some of you will remember Bell, California, the legend of Bell, California, which was this tiny little city inside of Los Angeles. As my son would inform me, it's an enclave, but it's actually a city. And they made national headlines because it turned out their city staff was a bunch of corrupt, well, put in whatever obscene gerund you want to put in there, obscene noun you want to put in there, but they were a bunch of just criminally corrupt people. This tiny town, paying their city manager somewhere on the order of, as I recall, it was $500,000. It may have been more or less, but it was an obscene salary that they were paying their city staff, which wasn't very big, their city council, and they were abusing all this stuff. And as it turns out, they were using asset forfeiture laws to fund all this. You see, they knew that they had a certain population that was in the city and or driving through the city that would not object strenuously. They would not argue with the police or the courts or whatever, specifically undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants. They were driving without, at that time, driver's licenses and without insurance and stuff like that. And so they intentionally targeted them coming through their city, stopped them, found out that they were driving illegal, they didn't have licenses, they didn't have insurance, impounded their cars, wrote them a ticket, impounded their cars, and then after 90 days or whatever, they would sell the cars and use the money to fund their salaries. And this wasn't, you know, one or two cars here or there. This was like a daily racket that they were doing. They were doing enough of it that they could fund their entire government salaries. It was absurd. Now, the argument about whether or not illegal immigrants should be driving or not is completely separate from this. It's still property. They still owned the stuff, and the government was still taking it and then never coming back and actually accusing them of a crime or punishing them for a crime or prosecuting them for a crime. It would just take their property and then let them go. And then they'd do it again because, of course, people have to get the working back. It was outrageous. And nobody wanted to talk about the whole illegal immigrant part side of that, and there was a reason for that at the time, but we'll get back to that some other day. In New Mexico, they were essentially doing the same thing. Not quite funding their government with it, but, well, I mean, they were. They were using the money to, well, they were taking property that they knew wasn't involved in a crime or that the owner of that property had no reason to suspect would be involved with a crime. And they were using it then to fund their activities, fund their police departments, fund their governments. And of course, in doing so, they created an incentive for themselves to keep doing it. That was the insane part of this. The nuts of this, it gets to the point where if someone is actually accused of a crime, civil asset forfeiture then is supposed to keep them from using the ill-gotten gains, the rotten fruit. It's the term for that, Pat. I've forgotten. There's fruit of the poisonous tree or something like that, from funding their defense so that they can't do that. But this isn't that. This isn't that at all. This is just, hey, somebody did something stupid. Let's take their car. Let's take their property. Let's take their house. Let's take their money. back in February, like I said, we talked about this case out of Indiana, where the feds just, well, there was a case in Wyoming where the guys just took $91,000 from the guy who had a legitimate reason to have it. We just took your money. We didn't do anything really wrong. We just took your money. And then out of Indiana, where they took a guy's car and sold it while he was trying to get it back, they lied to him and sold it. And this led to a case where the Supreme Court has now granted cert, and we talked about this, where the Supreme Court is actually going to hear this case on civil asset forfeiture and decide whether or not the Eighth Amendment's prohibition against excessive fines is incorporated against the states. It's a fascinating case from a couple of standpoints. One, from a civil libertarian standpoint, because basically the government is stealing from people and throwing up their hands and going, "Whoa, you let us do it." And then there's the whole process of incorporation that is fascinating to watch because most people don't understand it, right? The dumb part of this whole case out of New Mexico is that New Mexico banned civil asset forfeiture in 2015. So the state of New Mexico said, "Thou shalt not." And we celebrated that at the time, as I recall, trying to remember, that was a long time ago. But I'm pretty sure we celebrated the fact at the time that New Mexico had stepped forward and yay, they had banned this. But Albuquerque, the city of Albuquerque, okay, you want to talk about sanctuary city policies and that kind of stuff. The city of Albuquerque argues that the state law did not apply to itself. It doesn't apply to our city codes, and therefore we can continue to seize people's cars. Okay. They continued to do it. Lawsuit was filed in 2016. This is the suit that was decided yesterday. And Judge Browning has basically said, "Look, you guys, you're just ripping people off. That's all you're really doing here." The court concludes that the city of Albuquerque has an unconstitutional institutional incentive to prosecute forfeiture cases because in practice, the forfeiture program sets its own budget and can spend without meaningful oversight all of the excess funds it raises from the previous years. Thus, there is, quote unquote, a reasonable possibility that forfeiture officials' judgments will be, quote, distorted by the prospect of institutional gain, unquote. Oh, no, Dave. Government officials would never do that. Government officials would never act in their own department's best interests, right? They would never subsume constitutional rights in favor of their budget. No, that would never happen. Forfeiture program also violates procedural due process because owners have to prove that their cars are not subject to civil forfeiture. Oh, we seized your car. Well, you have to prove you're innocent. Well, wait a minute. No, I don't. And that's ultimately what the court ruled, was that the reason it's unconstitutional is because it violates the principle of innocent until proven guilty. That's the part that I don't get, that all those sheriffs sitting around that table with Donald Trump didn't get. It violates the ideas, the very substance of our legal system, which is innocent until proven guilty. If you can prove that the guy is guilty, if you can prove that the guy is a criminal and he violated your city freaking ordinances, then fine. Do it in a court and take his property with due process. But if you don't, that's not constitutional. And I cannot for the life of me understand how it is that elected officials don't understand that. Oh, they do understand it. They just figure they can get away with it because nobody's going to care. Like Bell, California, they figure the people that they're abusing aren't going to do anything about it. Well, bravo Zulu to the people of Albuquerque. At least one of them stood up and did it and forced the city. So this ruling comes down yesterday. But as it turns out, a year ago, the city of Albuquerque realized that, we're being stupid and we're going to lose. So we better stop this now before we really have a huge liability. So they actually canned the program a year ago, realizing that, you would literally have to be the dumbest person on the face of the planet or Jeff Sessions not to realize how unconstitutional this idea is. The idea that you can't figure this out, the idea that you can't understand the basic underpinning principle of the American justice system and use it then to your financial advantage ought to set off alarm bells. What's scarier to me isn't that there's government officials that didn't realize this or didn't admit this or didn't care about it, or what, that's probably the issue here, is they didn't care. What really bugs me is the freaking people of Albuquerque, for the most part, just went along with it and let it happen. You know, the whole, well, if they didn't have anything to hide, they wouldn't have been doing that mentality. No. Just because some drug dealer, which represents what? How many drug dealers can there be in Albuquerque? I don't even know what the population of Albuquerque is, but let's argue for the sake of discussion that it's, I don't know, 500,000. In order to have a significant portion of the population enough to justify the just seizure of property, how many people in Albuquerque would have to be drug dealers to justify that? To violate the rights of every citizen in favor of potentially maybe causing one drug dealer to not contemplate his next act. I mean, that's what Sessions said, right? How many do we need to be? How many people in Albuquerque need to be criminals, potentially, in order to justify just, you know, shit-canning the Constitution of the United States and the state of New Mexico? That's the problem that I have with it, is that nobody in Albuquerque seemed to see it that way. Nobody in Albuquerque, well, one person did, seemed to stand up and go, dude, I'm innocent. You have not proven me guilty. You cannot just seize my assets. And of course, governments all over the country, and including the federal government right now, are nervous as all get out because of this case out of Indiana, which could rule that civil asset forfeiture violates the Constitution's prohibitions on excessive fines found in the Eighth Amendment. I'm a court watcher. Constitution Thursday is my thing. I enjoy this stuff. The history of it, how it works, and I'm fascinated by watching this process unfold. My concern is that I had no doubt how Justice Kennedy would have voted on that. I have no doubt at all that Justice Kennedy would have said, "Are you out of your freaking minds? No, you can't do that. Innocent until proven guilty." Bothers me is I don't see anything in Judge Kavanaugh's record that makes me think that he thinks that way. In fact, I see it the opposite. I see him as a writing excuses for big government abuses. National security, you know. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it and see what happens. It's half past. It's Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You want to join me? Error code 209-565-DAVE is the text machine. We're on Facebook Live. You know, the cool thing about Facebook Live I discovered yesterday? I didn't know this. So, even if you don't watch it live, you watch it later on, you can still comment in time. So, it makes it feel like you're live, right? So, it's Plausibly Live. Get it? I'll be back right after this. Stay with us.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You are listening to The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hola! Welcome back. Tis I, Dave. You want to join me? Area code 209-565. Dave is the text machine. Email is dave@thedaveboatmanshow.com. And of course, we're on Facebook, The Dave Bowman Show. Twitter, same thing. iTunes. And of course, thedavebowmanshow.com. I don't know. I got to be careful sometimes how I say things because I'm passionate about a lot of things. I really am. One of the things I am not passionate about is college sports. I know that sounds strange because, Dave, you're a sports ball guy. You love baseball. You love football. But I don't like college sports for the most part. Now, there are some college sports that I do like. I love, as you know, Navy football. I will watch Navy play football, which is weird because I grew up an Oklahoma Sooners fan. My grandmother dearly wanted me to go to the University of Oklahoma, and I wanted to go there and play football. But even though that's deeply ingrained in my blood, I just don't care anymore. I really don't. It's just not that. I guess for me, college football has become, well, it's boring. I mean, it really is. It's literally, I could sit here today. I don't even have rosters or anything in front of me. And I can tell you who the four teams in the playoffs are pretty much going to be, you know, with a bubble of maybe 3 to 4 teams. It's dull. It really is. It's one of the reasons why college basketball is actually better than college football, because at least you get that tournament. And in a one-game tournament, anything can happen. Anything can happen. And football won't do that because, I don't know, it's stodgy and old-fashioned and, you know, they still... Anyway, I just... But I watch Navy football because I like Navy football. I know that Navy football is never going to compete for a national title. It's not about that. It never was. It never has been. Well, I mean, I guess it was once upon a time back in the 40s. But, you know, for the most part, college football is just, it's just dull. It really is. All the pageantry, Dave, all the marching bands, all the, you never get to see the marching bands because they never show that on halftime. They got more talking heads when it comes to college football analysis than, jeez, it's like, it's worse than politics in some cases. And in college basketball, it's not much better, but again, at least you have that tournament. I follow the University of Pacific in basketball. I do pay attention to them. Again, not a powerhouse team, they're fun. And a couple of years ago, Ben informed me that he wanted to go to the University of Pacific in Stockton, so... Maybe someday I will be a UOP dad. We'll see. The problem that I have with college sports in general, in addition to the fact that it's incredibly dull because it's primarily predictable, is the fact that it's... I gotta be careful how I say this. You do understand that these college coaches are government employees, right? For the most part. Now, there are a few private schools, I get it. But most of these state universities, in fact, in 39 out of 50 American states, the highest paid government employee in the state is either a football or basketball coach at the state universities, which means that the highest paid government employees are coaches who aren't as much coaches as they are publicity agents. And unfortunately, many of them, it's just a stepping stone to something else. It's just a stepping stone to the next job. Oh, I signed a 10-year contract? That doesn't really mean anything. Because in 3 years, the next bigger school is going to come knocking on my door and offer me to buy out that contract and pay me even more. And then when I do that, and then I go there, whatever moderate success I might have might turn into a pro contract. The professionals will call me, and then I'll go to the pros and realize that, oh, crap, they expect me to actually work here. And I'll have to go back to the college ranks, as so often happens. Anyway, point being that these people are government employees. We don't like to think of them in those terms, but they are government employees. Now, you could make the argument that, well, they have huge responsibilities of creating, you know, wealth and money for these colleges, and they create a whole lot of benefit financially for those schools. But then again, do they? I mean, we rarely see numbers on this stuff, but at the same time, okay, so we're paying a coach $1 million a year and we're selling tickets, and I get all that. I understand all that. But I keep coming back round to the idea that these people are government employees. And somewhere along the line, either they forget it or we forget it or somebody forgets it, and we don't seem to put them in the same category as we put other government employees. You know, government employees that are seizing our civil assets because it's beneficial to them. Those kind of people. We don't like to compare the two, but they're the same. They're government employees. I just happened to coach a game rather than seizing something. But then again, they're still government employees. They're still bound by the same ideas, the same principles. Oh, and the same laws, right? The same concepts that apply to you and me. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that you're at work. Okay? Let's even presuppose that you are a senior employee of some sort. Put yourself in the mindset that you are either a manager, a department head, possibly even a vice president, maybe even the president or CEO. Maybe you're even the owner. Standing around the water cooler one day, and you hear spoken of in a way that gets your attention, that another employee, junior to you, is having issues. Okay? The issues, whatever they might be, are borderline criminal. I mean, they could be, you know, you're not an investigator, but it sounds like maybe it could be criminal. It could be. Maybe an employee is sleeping with an underage girl, or maybe an employee is hitting their spouse, or maybe they're embezzling from another church or something, and so forth and so on. And you just happen to hear about it. The important thing to understand here is that it has absolutely nothing to do with your business, and your company and their job performance is not being affected in any way, shape, or form. But now you have knowledge that something may or may not have happened. What is your responsibility to that? It could be a crime. Do you have a responsibility to say something? I mean, that's what we keep telling ourselves, right? See something, say something. It's up to me. I got to do it. Do you have to say something? Now, there are some areas where you are a mandated reporter, depending on your position. And if you're in government, you are a mandated reporter, period. End of discussion. But maybe you are, maybe you're not. And you may be thinking to yourself, David, this is a crazy scenario, is it? The New Jersey courts have just ruled that in the state of New Jersey, at least, you are accountable and can be sued if you don't say something. Even though it's not related to your job, it's not related to your business, it's not related to the job performance, if you knew about it and didn't say anything, well, you're liable, at least in New Jersey. And that could spread significantly. In Ohio, government employees are mandated reporters. If they are aware of domestic violence, they are required to take action. They can't sit there and go, well, it doesn't affect me. I don't know nothing about it. Not my problem. What down is it? Oh, yeah. Second down and 8. What do we call? And of course, in this particular case, Urban Meyer, the head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, one of those boring teams that's always in it, may or may not, or should not have known about the behavior of one of his employees. In fact, it's hard to accept that he didn't know about it. I mean, I hate to play the what, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't like to play the what if game. I don't like to play the, well, you can't prove that he knew. I like to take the reasonable approach to things when it comes to stuff like this. You know, that's what a jury is told. What's reasonable? What would a reasonable person believe in this particular case? I find it unreasonable to believe that Urban Meyer did not know what was going on. For God's sakes, his wife knew what was going on. I don't know how many of you are married or ever been married, but I know this about being married. I know things that I don't even care about. I get told stuff that I don't even understand it. But that's part of my marital relationship. My wife tells me about stuff that I don't even, I mean, quite frankly, half the time I'm tuned out. But I learn things that they're not criminal. They're not. But I know things. There's no way in hell that Urban Meyer didn't know what was going on. His wife knew that one of his coaches was abusing his wife or ex-wife or some female in his life. And so much did this become apparent that Urban Meyer was forced to fire him. Okay, you can't be a coach no more because the Paterno defense doesn't work anymore. The Paterno defense of, hey, we're really good and everybody loves us, that doesn't work anymore. You know, there was a time when it did. Fortunately, we're past that time. Didn't work at Nuremberg. Hey, I was just following orders. Wasn't my job. I didn't have anything to do with it. It didn't work there. Didn't work for Joe Paterno. And now Urban Meyer finds himself on the outs at Ohio State, having been suspended by Ohio State yesterday. My guess is pending how we get him out of this contract, because we're paying this guy a hell of a lot of money, and he's a government employee. See, I keep circling back to that. He's a government employee. He's a mandated reporter. He has no excuse for saying, I didn't do anything because it wasn't any of my business. You're the coach of the damn football team. You're in charge of everything and everybody associated with that football team. Now, maybe you didn't know that the coach was doing it, but when you found out that the coach was doing it, don't you have a social responsibility as well as a legal responsibility to get up off your butt, close the office door, and go, dude, now I got to fire you, and I got to tell people about it. I got to tell the appropriate, I got to tell the dean, I got to tell the athletic director, they're going to tell the president. And they're going to want to get out in front of this because we got to protect the university. We got to protect, you know, 53 kids or whatever it is, however many kids it is on the team. That. But no, we're government employees. We know better. We can steal your assets. We can beat our wives or ex-wives and not worry about it. I come back to. It's the Paterno thing all over again. I mean, and it's not quite as bad, obviously, but the whole idea of why would I do the right thing? If I did the right thing, that would be hard. If I did the right thing, that would be difficult. But of course, I'm being paid by the government. I'm a government employee. I'm supposed to have the public trust. I'm supposed to be the guy that the public looks to and goes, well, there's an example of what we want in a government employee. That's what we're really all about. Even our state universities are run so well that the employees there know that they got to do the right thing all the time. And yet somehow or another, we don't do that. Somehow or another, we get excuses because we're really good as a football team. And the entirety that I've seen of the entirety of the NCAA football world today is furious. They're upset. How dare the NCAA, how dare Ohio State University force us to suspend our coach right before, you know, training camp start, and we get ready for a successful season. Our season is screwed. How do you think this guy's ex-wife feels? That the outcome of Ohio State football is more important than what her life was, the hell her life had become. I don't know, man. You get these coaches and you get these people that they don't think of it as government service. And I think maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe there should be more emphasis on the fact that, hey, dude, you're collecting a state government paycheck. You are part of the government of this state. And consequently, we expect you to act as if you are a member of the government of the state. And when people in government do stupid things, quasi-legal things, we take action. And it's your fault. It's just like getting in a duck boat in a storm. If you're dumb enough to do that, that's on you. Don't stand there and go, well, it's not fair to our football team. You should have thought of that before you did what you did. You should have thought of that before you decided not to do something that you should have done. You know, doing the right thing the first time. Should have thought of that then. You didn't think about that then, did you? You were more worried about wins and losses than you were about doing the right thing. That's some pretty crappy coaching there, if you ask me. What's the example you're setting for these kids that you're supposed to be raising? Remember, there's, you know, 70 kids on a football team. There's 117 Division I schools. That's a lot of kids, right? Playing D1 football. Not all of them are going into the NFL. Very few of them actually ultimately end up playing professionally. So what's the example you're setting for the rest of them? Oh, hey, situational ethics. Wins are more important than doing the right thing. Keeping that paycheck more important to do. Oh, you don't get paid? Sorry. Don't worry about that car over there. That's more important than doing the right thing the first time, the right way. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Urban Meyer. I have no sympathy for Ohio State. I mean, I guess I do it a little bit because they look at it and go, why the hell didn't you do what you were supposed to do? You've put us in a no-win situation. So maybe Ohio State University, you look at it and you go, well, that sucks. But I have no sympathy for Urban Meyer at all. I haven't had a lot of sympathy for him since he left Utah. But at the end of the day, you're a government employee. And it's unreasonable to sit here and go, well, he didn't know. It's unreasonable to say, well, he couldn't have known. He was the head coach. I mean, it's not his business. And even if it was, well, you know, it's uncomfortable to talk to people about those kinds of things, isn't it? I don't know. It's at some point you just got to go, you're a government employee, dude. You should have known better than that. And when Ohio State doesn't make the national championship this year, and God, I hope they don't. Not because of this, but because I want somebody like, I don't know, UTEP or Air Force or Georgia Southern. I want somebody like that to win it just to make it interesting. At any rate, when they don't win the national title this year, they'll try to blame this. They'll say, well, it created a distraction. Yeah, but whose fault is that? He knew and he didn't do nothing. Maybe if he'd have done the right thing to start with, we wouldn't be in this position. Maybe if in Albuquerque, they'd have done the right thing to start with, they wouldn't be embarrassed today. Maybe if Bell, California had done the right thing, they wouldn't be in jail today. But that's water under the bridge, and they can't do nothing about it. Politics makes for strange bedfellows. This might be the story of the week right here. I know it's kind of an abrupt change, but I got to get this story in because there's some reasons why I got to get this story in. I have a friend that's really into Bigfoot. I don't know why. I have no idea, but she is absolutely convinced that Bigfoot exists. Clearly, it does not. Clearly, Bigfoot is a myth, and she knows I think that. But point being that Bigfoot is a big part of American lore, I guess. So, apparently now, there was a big debate in the Virginia 5th District for Congress. Where, well, Corey, who's this gal's name? Her name is, I can't find her name. Anyway, she said this about her opponent. My opponent, Denver Riggleman, which is funny already, running mate of Corey Stewart, was caught on campaigning with a white supremacist. Now, she writes, her name is Leslie Cockburn. So you got Denver Riggleman and Leslie Cockburn. She writes, and I'm not kidding. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, folks. Quote, now he has been exposed as a devotee of Bigfoot erotica. This is not what we need on Capitol Hill. So she screenshotted a bunch of Instagram posts that had Bigfoot erotica with censored parts on it. The Republican by the name of Denver Riggleman, as I said, who's a veteran and a craft distillery owner, said that Cockburn had misinterpreted his book, The Mating Habits of Bigfoot, which he characterized as a, quote, long-running prank with his friends. He said the book was a parody of an anthropological study. It has nothing to do with Bigfoot erotica. For her part, Miss Cockburn, can't make that up, said that she posted the images because she wanted voters to know the kind of man who they want to represent them in Congress. These Instagrams are very revealing, she said. I find them disturbing. I leave it to people to make their judgments about this guy because he's a devotee of Bigfoot erotica. You know, at some point you just go, well, I don't even know what you say. I know this. I want to read the book now, The Parody of a Bigfoot Anthropological Study. As if that in of itself, Denver Rigmelton, Leslie Cogburn, arguing over Bigfoot erotica, right? That's enough to go to make you go, well, that's weird. That's odd. That's, you know, it's got its elements to it that you gotta love, right? As if that is not enough, however, there is much more to the story. Well, I don't know about much more, but its story gets 8,000% bigger. How's that? The website Pornhub, it's an adult website, I presume, where you can go and watch pornography, said that searches for Bigfoot, as in the giant biped of North American lore, have shot up. Now get this, are you ready for this? 8,000%. 8,000% increases in the searches for Bigfoot on Pornhub since this story broke about Leslie Cockburn claiming that Denver Riggleman is into Bigfoot erotica. The last few years have taught us to expect the unexpected when it comes to politics in the United States, reads a statement from Pornhub. We're pretty open-minded here, but none of us were expecting that Bigfoot pornography would be at the center of a contentious race for U.S. House of Representatives set in Virginia. You know, once upon a time, I had a producer who used to say, if you can think it, there's porn for it somewhere on the internet. And apparently there is Bigfoot porn, 8,000% increase, which means that somebody was already searching for it to begin with. I don't know who that was. Because if nobody was, then it would be an infinite increase, right? So somebody was already looking at this. Somebody was already into this. And Leslie Cockburn, Denver Riggleman, Bigfoot erotica. True story, folks. It's a happening. It's called Rule 34, right? If there's something, if you can think of it, there's porn for it in the internet. I got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Make sure you check out all the great shows we have at podcast99.org. Coming up next, Tim Price. He's talking gun control, and we will see you tomorrow for a Friday episode of The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.